and welcome back to Unconventional, the podcast where we talk about alternative routes to going to university. I can't believe we are already on episode 8 of the podcast, and what an episode I have for you today. Joining me for this week's episode is Steph Parry, a musical theatre performer currently playing the role of Kate in Mamma Mia the Party at the O2. I should also add at this point that Steph and I recorded this episode in September, so when we talk about the theatre industry, some things may not be as accurate or up to date with the current climate. However, this week, we got to talk about Steph's route into the industry, what it's like going to drama school, and why following your own path is so important. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Yeah, all good here, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm okay. I'm excited. So today we're going to talk a bit about drama school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really intrigued to learn a little bit more about drama school, but before we start talking about that, I want to talk to you about kind of what it was like for you growing up, more kind of like A-level time. Was the plan always to do musical theatre?
No, actually. And I feel like if I'd have known then what I know now, I would have taken a different route. So I was very much like pushed down the A-level track by my mum and dad were very like, you have to get your qualifications, you have to kind of, you know, get all your academia done first before you can do anything. Still not really knowing what it was that I wanted to do. So I did, for A-level, I did French, maths and geography. And the only reason why I didn't do geography for GCSE, the only reason why I did geography was because the school that I went to had such a minimal choice of subjects that of all of them, I went, well, that sounds all right. And they were doing natural disasters. That was the first module, which was like the first term, was on natural disasters. And I was like, that interests me. And for that module, I think I got an A, and then I slowly just got worse and worse throughout the 2 years of doing geography, because then we were learning about rocks and things, and I didn't have the foundation in that. I didn't study the GCSE so I was like constantly catching up. So I ended up getting a C, I think, overall in geography. And then I did maths. Why I did maths, I have no idea. I was just somebody who liked sums, and then you do maths A level and it becomes like this whole kind of science-based thing. And I had to have a lot of help. I had to have a lot of help with from my teacher, who gave up so much of her time, Mrs. Price, bless her. She gave up so much of her time to help me, and I scraped a D. But then, like, I look at it now, and I think about, like, you know, these French, maths, and geography. I've done nothing with any of them. And if I could do it all over again, I would have left school, I would have gone to college, and I would have done a BTEC in performing arts. That's what I feel like. If I'd have known then what I know now, that is what I would have done. However, I did not know then what I know now. And so that was the route that I took. And then it's not that I decided that I didn't want to go into further education. It was more that I just didn't know what I was doing. And in the end, I got this job. I was a doctor's receptionist. And so when I went to go and pick up my A-level results, I had a job, and I was like, I'm not bothered about what my results were, because I've got this job that pays me £7.30, whatever it was, an hour. I am raking it in. And that was basically my life planned out for me, like at that point of my life. And I didn't think, and I didn't think I was going to do anything else. I did fill out my UCAS form, and I applied for a couple of universities to do drama, like really half-heartedly. But I was interested in LIPA. Like LIPA was something I was interested in, because you could apply for that through the UCAS route. And I went for my audition, and I had the flu, and it was the worst audition I've ever done in my life. And I did not get in. And for me, then I just was like, oh, well, that's it then. I'll be a doctor's receptionist. That's what I'll do. That will be my life.
So had you always been, obviously, you know, applying to
like Lipa and places like that. Was you always into the arts? How did you get started in kind of the world of theatre?
Oh yeah, like, I mean, so my mum and dad are a they're a vocal harmony duo, and they sing in the pubs and clubs of North Wales. And so I grew up like with that. They would gig like 4 or 5 times a week sometimes. And then as I got older, like I would go and, you know, I'd go and set up the equipment with my dad, and then I'd just have a sing to an empty club. And you know, and I just always used to love to sing. And then when I started a bit late, but I was probably about 13, I started going to dance classes. And with that, there was like a drama. There was like a drama club that you could join as well. So it was something that I knew that I loved, and I knew that it was something that I was quite good at, but I didn't think I could do it as a job, and I was never encouraged to do it as a job. I think where I'm from, it's nobody really does it. I don't know if this still exists, but there was a computer program that we had at school where it asked you a load of questions, and then it told you, from what you answered, it told you what your job should be. You still got it. All right. So every time I did it, there was probably only about 30 jobs in this system. And every time I did it, it came up as like a puppet maker. And I was like, a puppet maker? But it was stuff that was so random. And I have this like recollection of trying to doctor it so that it would come out as some kind of performing thing. So I could be like, look, this says that's what I should be doing. And it is really interesting how, so when I was in my A-level, when I was doing my A-levels in school, there was a musical that was happening, a school musical, and they were talking to me about playing the lead role in it. But the drama teachers had been told that I couldn't have the lead role in this musical because I was in my final year of A-levels and I was having to all have extra maths tuition anyway. So they were like, this work, it's too much workload for Steph, she can't have it. And I remember sitting there with the two drama teachers and going, but I don't care about maths, like I remember saying this and being like, this is more important to me, this is more important for what I want to do, and having to like plead my case to be given the lead in the musical. And I think at this point they hadn't guaranteed that it was going to be me, and I was just there like literally just like begging. I was like, please don't take this away from me, like this is my time, this is my opportunity. In the end they gave it to me, so I still didn't do very well in maths.
Did you go from being a doctor's receptionist to then going to drama school?
So the reason why I was a doctor's receptionist, because my dad worked in the doctor's surgery. So my dad was, I think at this point, my dad was practice manager of the local doctor's surgery. So it started as like a summer job where I did a bit of filing for them. And then there was an opening for a part-time receptionist. And so it just became this natural progression that I got this job. And I was like, okay, great. I've got a full-time job. That's what we strive to get, is a full-time job. And I've got it. So winning. And then I must have been there for about 8 months. And I wasn't, I knew that something wasn't right. I could just feel it. I could just feel that I wasn't fulfilled and this wasn't where I was like meant to be. And I just have this memory of filing away a file on one day and just having this feeling of, what am I doing? What am I actually doing right now? Because is this it? And it was like, is this it? Is this my life? And then it just so happened I had the afternoon off and I went to my friend's house and she had the stage newspaper in her bedroom, because that's what we used to do. We used to buy the stage. I don't know why. I mean, to be honest with you, I used to buy the stage newspaper, see that they were looking for a singer for something. And then I send the worst backing track, or like the worst track, a tape cassette of me in a jiffy envelope. Like, I never used to hear anything apart from this one guy who rang me and I had to sing What a Feeling down the phone. So God knows what that was an audition for. My mum was like, what are you doing in the kitchen? Me going, What a Feeling. I went, the fight was stupid. But yeah, so I looked at the stage and I was looking at drama schools, and I remember just looking at it and being like, and then I went home and I remember phoning Italia Conti, and I think it was Italia Conti and Arts Ed. They were the two that I just rang, and I just was like, please can you send me a prospectus? And then my mum was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm getting a prospectus for drama school. And that was the start. That was the start of it. And then in the next, you know, the next thing was then I applied. And then at the same time, I started to apply for like entertainment jobs as well. And so I ended up, I think it was in May. So I've been at a job for about a year. And I got a job as a resident entertainer for Warren Holidays. So that's where I ended up going. I earned £100 a week, £111 a week, working so many hours as this resident entertainer for Warner Holidays. And I did that for about 3 months. And then it just so happened that I got my place at Arts Ed. So I left, and then I went to drama school. And I remember starting college and feeling very out of my depth and feeling like a very, very small fish. And actually, in my I did my first term, and at the end of my first term, I actually got pulled into the office and told that I needed to ideas, or I wouldn't be returning for the second term, because I was so timid. I know that that's hard to believe right now. I was so scared. I was so like, I didn't speak up. I was so like, intimidated, I think the word is. So I had a choice, and it was like, I either carry on this way or I need to make a change. And so I think I went home for Christmas, and I came back and I was like, hi, here I am. Yeah, so that's me.
For some people that might not know what the differences are between university and drama school.
Yeah.
Would you be able to kind of explain a little bit about kind of what drama school is and the type of things that you did, and obviously what the qualification was as well?
Yeah, so I went to Arts Ed, and I did a 3-year course, and when I started that course it was a diploma. So as far as I was concerned, I was going to get a professional diploma in musical theatre. However, when we got to probably midway through second year, we found out that Arts Ed were going for to change their course to a degree. So I think it got awarded to them like perhaps when we were towards the end of our second year, or maybe the beginning of our third year. So we then found out that we were probably going to get a degree by the end of it. We were going to be the first year to get a degree from Arts Ed, and we were the first year. So with regards to written work, I think all we had to do written wise is we had to write an essay about one of our experiences. So throughout we would do third year shows, and we had to basically write up about the whole show, and that was it. I think from what I can remember, it was a long time ago, that was it for what we actually had to do, and the rest was judged on performance. So we got graded from our shows basically. The difference with drama, I mean, I haven't been to university, so I don't know, but drama school is a very, very intense time where you're in every day from 8:30 till 6, Monday to Friday, just intensely training, doing ballet, jazz, tap, singing, choral singing, technique, acting, voice, dialect, so much different stuff in order to get you kind of ready for the industry. And then the evenings are kind of spent you know, you've got homework, and you've got lines to learn, you've got songs to prep, and then sometimes, like on a weekend, there's something else going on, and it was like a really intense time. And then you're also then trying to fit in work to like pay your way and stuff. So it was 3 amazing years. But I would speak to friends of mine who were at uni, and they would be having a very, very different experience to what I was having, just in a social way.
So do you feel like you missed out on anything?
I feel like the only thing I missed out on was things like, you know, Freshers Week and having, you know, that social element. I feel like we didn't get to go as hard as what I could. I have no idea. I only know from like friends, because I didn't go to university, but I feel like, and things like societies and stuff, I feel like sometimes in university you get to discover other things that you really enjoy. Whereas in drama school, you're so kind of focused in on why you're there and getting yourself ready for the industry. Whereas I don't know, I think in university you're encouraged to try other things. You're encouraged to, you know, join the kayak society, or, you know, let's do, I'm literally thinking of Pitch Perfect and being like, I would be in the Bard and Bellas, obviously. And, you know, that kind of stuff. And I don't know if I'm a little bit influenced by American TV and I think, oh, it's all that kind of stuff, maybe. But I wouldn't say that I missed out, and I wouldn't say that I'm, you know, that I am, I would have done anything differently at all. But I guess if I think about what could have been different if I'd have gone to uni, then it would have been that. But I got to go and work on cruise ships for a few years, so I definitely got to live out the social life in that way.
With drama school, like, you're there to train to get a job at the end of it, and you did get your first job in your last year, but you left early, didn't you?
Yeah, I left 6 weeks early. So it was literally just, I think it was at the half term point of the last term, I left to go and do, I got the role of Rosalind in As You Like It, a UK tour, which was very different to what I'd been training to do. So basically the third year of drama school, you are gearing up to get an agent. You're doing all these performances and agents are coming to watch, and then, you know, you'll get taken on and then they'll sub you for work. Whereas I was one of the few people that I didn't have any agent interest. Agents were just not interested in me. And then, so I was working for myself and just applying for like anything and everything. And then I, you know, I was like, well, I'll just apply for Shakespeare as well. I can do that. And then got the job, and was just like, I suppose there was a part of me that was like, I want to stay and do my last 6 weeks of training. I want that. But then there was the other part of me that was like, well, why am I, I've been offered work, and that's what we all want to do at the end of the day. So why would I not go and do it? So I remember it being a really quick decision, because I auditioned for it. I had to go to Lincoln to audition for it. And then I think I got the call that night offering it to me. And I was like, oh, wow. And then them being really like, we need an answer quickly, because I think rehearsals were starting in like a matter of weeks. And I just remember it was like suddenly my life just changed. And the thing that I think, you know, especially coming from a family where the academic side of things is really important, is that I faced a decision where they said to me that I might not get my degree if I leave early to go and do this job. And that became a bit of a battle with, you know, I remember my mum being really like, but you might miss out on your degree if you go off and do this. And I was very much like, well, I didn't ever start this course to get a degree. The degree just kind of happened. Like, you know, I none of us thought that we were going to get a degree when we first signed up for Arts Ed. And so I kind of, you know, stuck to my guns and I left. And I ended up still getting the full qualifications. So yeah, it all worked out all right in the end.
Something I wanted to talk to you about was kind of imposter syndrome and rejections, because I know that when I apply for a job, and I've always had the knockbacks of we don't have enough experience, and I think that's very easy to brush off. Whereas if you go for an audition, it's not always, it might just be because you don't fit into the rest of the cast or you don't look how they want you to look. How do you kind of deal with imposter syndrome and like rejections within your industry?
I think so. Rejection is a massive part of this industry. Like, I guess if you compare an actor going for auditions to somebody who might interview for a job, I feel like you interview for a job a lot less than you audition as an actor. So in some ways, I guess you have more of an opportunity to get used to it. Auditioning is such a huge part of being an actor, and we just have to accept it as part of the job. That doesn't make rejection any easier. And I find the best way to cope with rejection is to allow it to hit you, is to realize that it hurts and it sucks. And then you have your moment and then you pick yourself up and you move on. Because I find that if you're going to sit in it for too long, it's not going to serve you. It's not going to, you know, but I also feel like if you just literally bounce it off straight away, then you're denying the fact that you cared about it. And I think it's good that you care about it. It's good that you want it. And then when it doesn't happen, it's like, oh, I'm a bit gutted. But I can pick myself up and I can move on. So I think it's important to acknowledge that feeling. Like imposter syndrome is definitely something that still happens to me. I still have my moments of like, what am I doing here? You know, I'm sometimes still that 16-year-old Steph Parry from North Wales that, you know, has a moment of, you know, I remember walking around London, handing in front of house CVs to stage door, but being so scared for some reason to walk into stage door to give my CV in. I don't know why, but I was so into, I was like, oh, it's a stage door in the West End. Oh, you know, and then now I like walk into those stage doors. Like that's my place of work. But then sometimes that little Steph Parry that gets intimidated by it, you know, rears her head, and I just have to kind of be like, oh, that's okay. And it's the stuff that grounds you too, because if you're constantly just like, oh, well, you know, it's great and this is where I am or whatever, then I just feel like it makes you human and it makes you real, and people, you know, people can warm to you if you're, so there is a part of me that's like, it's useful to have that sometimes, just to bring you back down to earth and keep you grounded, as long as it's not taking over, then because I find that like lack of confidence as an actor can really like affect how you do something. So if you're on set and you're having a lack of confidence, and so therefore you're not you know, serving the part as much as you would like to because you're feeling really underconfident, then that's just, it's not helpful. So it's important to remember that sometimes you need confidence just in order to be able to do the best for other people. And I find that helps. I find whenever I take it away from it, me, and making it about other people, I find that helps me.
You have had a really amazing career. Well, I think you have. You've been in some of my favourite shows, Mamma Mia and Billy Elliot being two of them. I wanted to talk a little bit about your career, but I also want to know what your first ever show was that you went to see.
Oh, Joseph. Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I think I was about 10. Jason Donovan was in it and Lindsay Hateley was the narrator. And I remember sitting there seeing Lindsay Hateley in her fancy waistcoat and thinking, well, A, thinking how amazing she was, and B, thinking, that's what I want to do. I want her. I want to be like her. I want her job. Like, that's what I want to do. And then she actually came to watch. She saw me in 42nd Street because she tweeted about, or somebody told me that she was in, and I was like, this is crazy that Lindsay Hakeley's in watching the show, and I'm playing Dorothy Brock, and she's watching it, and this is crazy. And I really wanted to message her and be like, you're the reason why I'm doing this. And I chickened out because I didn't know her. And then about, 9 months ago, I was in Mamma Mia party, and I'm working with Joe Monroe, who's a really good friend of hers. And so Lindsay came to watch the show. And I was like, I'd really love to meet her because I just want to tell her that she was my first, you know, person who I ever saw performing in real life and made me want to do this. And so I was just like, went to talk to her. She's the most lovely person, and she was just so gracious and wonderful. And it was just so nice to kind of, I don't know, come full circle and be, and she, her watching me, was, yeah, so weird.
I'm trying to think what my first West End show I went to watch was. And I think it was on a school trip. It was like the year 7 school trip. And it was The Wizard of Oz at the Palladium.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Danielle Hope after she had won the Andrew Lloyd Webber show. That's what nice. I That was my first.
Was that with Hannah Waddingham as the witch?
No, I missed Hannah Waddingham. Oh,
she is incredible. She's another person like who, when I got to work with her recently in The Pirate Queen, I was just like, you're Hannah Waddingham. You're like, I'm hugely inspired by you. So yeah, that was cool.
What do you think are some of your career highlights? And it can be in anything you've done, but what are the kind of standout moments for you that have happened over the last couple of years?
Okay, I think a really obvious standout moment is the day that I ran down the road from 42nd Street to Mamma Mia. So that has to be, so a moment in time that I could never imagine would have happened. I remember getting 42nd Street and knowing the story about, do you know the story about Catherine Zeta-Jones? She was 42nd Street in the original cast in the 80s, and she was understudy Peggy Sawyer. And I can't remember what happened, but she was on, and a producer saw her, and I think she then got the role of Peggy. So it's quite a famous story of Catherine Zeta-Jones being an understudy and, you know, taking over. And I remember when I got the job and thinking like, oh, 42nd Street, that's where magic happens. And I remember having that weird thought. And then, you know, never in a million years thinking that something like that would happen to me when I'm there, and it to happen, you know, relating to another show. So if you don't know the story, then I was in 42nd Street in the dressing room, and I got a phone call from Mamma Mia, where the girl playing Donna had sustained an injury. And they asked me to go around there, take over the role of Donna with a very, very small amount of time. Basically the show had stopped for 18 minutes, and in that time they'd called me, got me down there in costume, and got me on the stage. So that was, and the way it blew up afterwards as well was, you know, I was being interviewed, like, I remember getting a message from Jason Manford being like, please can you come and appear on Absolute Radio, I'd love to talk to you because you're our legend of the week. And and it just being, I don't know, I guess a moment where I just was like, oh wow, this is really fun. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing all the press, and you know, we need you to go to BBC Radio today and things. And I personally like just found it to be a bit of a fun ride. And because I knew as well, I think that it wouldn't last for a long time. It would be old news very soon. So I kind of rode the wave and really enjoyed it. And then from that, they then, you know, getting the role of Dorothy for a couple of months and having, you know, being the one in the number one dressing room and having my name and having a program which said the part and it was my face above it rather than, you know, it, and having my picture out. There's just things like that that I think that yeah, there's just there's that part of you that wants those things, you know. It's so great, I love just to work, but there's just little perks I think that you get, which are just a really enjoyable, like, as somebody who's worked for however many years and has, you know, the, I don't know, the goals that you have, you just, they're just little points, I guess, that you just go, oh, that's really cool, and I love that, and that's, yeah, makes me feel all warm and fuzzy, and I love that, yeah. So I think that's probably, it's got to be, and it'll always be a career highlight. I think whatever happens in my career, and somebody says, what are your career highlights, then that's always going to be a big moment, I feel, for me. And hopefully there'll be many more highlights in the future that I can talk about. And booking my first TV job, that was a massive career highlight as well, because it's something that I've been wanting for a long, long time. I mean, who knows when it will be on the telly, because who knows when anything will get up and running again. But that will be a moment as well, being able to just be like, there I am! I'm what pointing at the TV doing? Right now.
What TV? I'm forgotten. Love it.
Yeah. Do you watch it?
It's one of my favourite shows. I love Unforgotten. I think it's great.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a good TV show. So, you know, things like being able to work with, you know, being on set with Nicola Walker is like, I'm doing like the praising action. Yeah, because she's one of my favourite actresses. So another career highlight. And I'm sure there's, you know, hopefully, I'm in this for the long game, so hopefully there'll be many more.
You come across as someone that's really ambitious. But what was it like when you were a standby? Because you, what I'm getting from you is you love performing, you love being on the stage, but being a standby, you kind of don't get that.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was in Wicked, because Wicked is a place where there's two standbys for Elfborough and Glinda. And I'd see them and think, oh, they've got the best job. They just, you know, they come in and they don't have to get changed. Because I hate getting changed. I don't know what it is about getting changed. So that's probably why what I love about Mamma Mia the Party is I'm in the same costume. And I just have a change at the end. So I love it that I'm just in the same costume. I don't know why I hate changing, I just do. And so I'll be like, oh, they don't even need to get changed out of their own clothes. But actually, being a standby, for me personally, I was a bit like, and especially kind of being a standby, having the role, going back to being a standby, I found quite difficult because, like you say, all I want to do is perform. I want to be out there. I want to be on that stage. So I mean, it had its perks, and there were moments that I absolutely loved, but I think overall, if I could choose, I would always choose to be out there rather than be in the dressing room. But I'm glad I got to experience it.
So reflecting back now, because obviously, you know, like we talked about, you didn't go to drama school straight away, and if you could go back, you would have gone to college. Yeah. But how important, looking back now, was it that you had that moment and you were on the phone, be like, just I need a prospectus, like, what, how important was it for you to actually end up following what you want to do?
I think so important, because I feel like we've all got something within us that we feel like we should be doing, where we feel like that is something that can fulfill us. And it's like you hear all these things about, like, follow your bliss. And there's certain things that they fill you with passion and joy. And there's just something about a certain something for each and every one of us. And everybody is different. But there'll be something that literally lights you up inside. And when you do it, you feel like You feel so alive. And I think if you have that thing, and if you know what that thing is, then I'm like, follow it, because it's what's going to make you, it's going to fulfill you. And if you feel fulfilled, then you can, it's not, and I think, I don't want to say it's like, it's going to make you happy, because I don't think that's the right word. I think it's just a fulfillment. And so, yeah, I think it's like, follow your bliss, follow that thing that lights you up inside. And I'm so glad that I did, because I just wouldn't have been happy where I was. And I think regardless of, if even if I hadn't have on that very day, if I hadn't have done that, I'd have done it eventually, because it would have happened eventually. Because I think when you've got that little voice that's talking, you've got that something, you've got that inner voice, or you've got that, if your inner self, all that kind of stuff, the authentic you, like, you will eventually listen, and you will follow it.
Let's talk a little bit about lockdown, because obviously weren't allowed to work because theatres and the whole arts industry has been closed. I don't think you got off too bad with lockdown. You've done loads of projects and all these exciting things. How have you found lockdown?
I've had waves. So I started it off where I literally was just like, I need to do something. And I need to do, and I literally put out a Twitter post, and I was like, any graduates out there that need a chat, hit me up. Like, I've got this day free and this day free. And I just filled up days with one-to-ones where I just chatted with graduates who, I just wanted to kind of connect and be like, I left drama school without an agent. Like, I understand adversity. I mean, you guys have been given like pretty, you know, a big dose of adversity right now. So I just wanted to, I don't know, be an ear really and offer a bit of advice. So I did a lot of that, and that took up quite a lot of time. And because of that, then I got asked to be involved in the Industry Minds program. I'm doing something at the moment with Maven Casting and Associates, where we're chatting to more grads. So that was really interesting. And then I started up the lockdown lives thing, because I've got equipment in the cupboard that I just was like, all right, then if I can't sit, I'm just going to sing in my house. And so I did that for a bit, and that kept me, and it was more just like, I wanted to keep myself entertained. And then I was like, if there's anybody out there that wants to watch it, then great. And then it ended up being like, there was people that tuned in every night, and which was awesome. And then that led to kind of doing a couple of online shows with my friend Ross, because he was also doing, because he messaged me being like, I'm loving your lives, I'm going to start doing them. And then we did one together where he came around my, just as like the bubbles thing, he came around my house. We did it like an online show. And then now we're doing one in Crazy Cox next month. So we were like, we're going to do one together, live in person. So the first few months I was like, just on it, just doing. And then probably like a month ago, I had a dip where I was like, when is this going to end? Enough now. And then I'm just things are starting to, you know, there are things like us having this little show booked. I'm back in the gym, which is always great for my mental health. So I feel like it's been, I feel like you say, with lockdown, I've kind of chosen to use the time in a productive way as much as possible. However, I know a lot of people who haven't done that because they haven't wanted to do that, and that's okay. Because I think so much time in this business is spent like rushing around and trying to fit in anything and everything. And for us to be given this gift of time, I guess, some you can use it however way you want to. So yeah, and then so I did have a dip, but I feel like I'm back to my kind of like, okay, what's happening now? So it's all good, and I'm really grateful to be seeing people again. That's been good. And actually, I was talking about it with my husband the other day, and I was like, as if 5 months ago, however long it was, we weren't allowed to leave our house apart from going for a walk. Like, as if that was a thing. And we were talking about it. We were like, yeah, like we just adapted to it, and it was fine. And you know, we made it work, and it was okay. And now we wear masks, and we adapt to that. And we were just chatting about how adaptable human beings are, and yeah, so it's very interesting.
Because of the pandemic and everything that's happened with the arts industry, do you think that people outside of the industry have learned anything?
I don't know, because I still think that people don't necessarily realize just how much falls under the umbrella of the arts. You know, all the stuff, all of the, you know, I've literally got the radio on in the background, you know, how they're all artists. People, if we didn't have artists, recording artists, we wouldn't have the radio. If we didn't have, you know, screen actors, we wouldn't have Netflix, which has kept us all company in this time. And I think, and I don't know if people necessarily, I don't know if people, if the people who aren't in the industry necessarily realize just how much is, how many people are out of work right now. How many, you know, or, and not even just, I'm not talking about performers, you know, the performers are the ones that people see, but then there's all those people that are behind, you know, if we're looking at TV, for example, then, you know, what about all the camera operatives? What about the producers? What about the editors? What about all of the makeup artists, all of those people? And then you've got in theater where, you know, wardrobe departments that have worked on shows for so many years have been like laid off, and you just, I don't know, when you think about it like that, it's crazy. But I think because the general public just see the actors and the performers, they don't realize that that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more. I have no idea, if I'm honest with the answer to your question, I have no idea whether or not people realize the huge, and also the huge impact, I think, as well, that this is making on London, how the theatre brings so many people into town. And you just go, without that, the restaurants and everything else is taking a huge impact as well.
Mm.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think I never realised, obviously, how much goes into putting on a show. Like, you just sit there in the audience, but there's, you know, you sit there and you enjoy seeing what, like 20 people on a stage, but there's probably like 30 more people behind stage that make it happen.
And then you've got all the people in the offices, you've got all like the, you know, the people who promote the shows, and then you've got all the front of house people, and you realize the magnitude of it, isn't it?
And how lockdown, everyone has gone to, as a form of escapism, Netflix, watching YouTube, all of this kind of stuff. Yet, if the arts industry had literally, if someone had just come in and said, right, you're done, that's it. But to everything within the arts, we wouldn't have had any escapism during lockdown. But I do have one final question for you.
Yeah.
It's the big question that I ask all of my guests at the end of the show, is what do you know now that you wish you'd known at 18?
Gosh, so much. So I think my main thing is is this, it's the important thing of like how individual we all are, how we are all completely unique, and there is absolutely no point in looking at somebody else and being like, oh, I wish I was where they are, or I wish I had what they have. Like, comparison is the thief of joy. And so it's so important to focus on you and being the best version of you. And also knowing that we all have very different paths, and just focusing, I think, on your path and where you're headed. And there's a wonderful thing like about, you know, oh, what is it? It's like, there's a reason why the, there's a reason why the rear view mirror is so much smaller than the windscreen. Because if you spend all your time, like don't spend all your time looking back. It's about looking forward through that windscreen and not spending time looking in that tiny little rear view mirror and looking, you know, looking back. It's like about constantly looking forward. And I don't know, I think I definitely have more gratitude in my life now than I had then. And I find that is such a great thing to have. And yeah, I'd say I definitely am much more like optimistic these days than I was back then. And just knowing that, you know, being confident in yourself is not, that confidence and arrogance are two very different things. And I think when I was 18, I was so scared of being confident because I didn't want to be arrogant. And it's knowing, like, and I know now that that's not the same. Yeah. So it's just having that, like, confidence in yourself, confidence in where you're going. Yeah, and just knowing that if you have those things, like, everything, and everything will be okay. Like, I know that everything will always just be okay. And if it isn't, everything will be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. It was an absolute privilege to chat to Steph. As someone who loves musical theatre and Mamma Mia, she is absolutely just incredible. If you did enjoy today's episode, you can leave a rating and a review on the Apple Podcast app, and you can follow and subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can join me, Niamh Gordon-Farley, back here next week for a brand new episode of Unconventional.